Please do take a seat. And as you take a seat, I'd invite you to look at your own fingers, especially your little finger. And just ponder with me for a moment just how awesome your little finger is. I mean, isn't it amazing? I wonder, can you give me a little finger wave? That's nice. Come on, every one of it, even on the back row, little finger wave. That'd be good. It's awesome, isn't it? I mean, you might think, we all compare ourselves to others. And you might think, in comparison to other people in this church, I'm just like my little finger. But think how awesome your little finger is. And wiggle it a bit more and have a look, see what's going on in your hands and right down to your wrist. Yeah, it's all interconnected, isn't it? Have a look. As you wiggle your little finger, stuff's going on down in your wrist. It's interconnected. There's a local interdependency there. Hold on to that term. A local interdependency going on there. You can wave your little finger because there's connections with bones and muscles and tendons and stuff. And it goes right down out, well, right up into your wrist. It's amazing. It's really complicated. Just a little finger. Amazingly complicated and crafted by God. But now, let's go further. Now, let's consider your arm. How much more can your little finger do because it's connected to an arm? Because it's connected to an arm, it can grab stuff and place it. Isn't that awesome? Just think about that. Your little finger on its own can't do that. But by being connected to an arm, it can grab and place. It's amazing. But what does your little finger need to survive on an ongoing basis? Well, it needs oxygen and nutrients and blood. How does it get that? By being connected to the whole body system. So local interdependency, something bigger with an arm enables it to do that much more, and being connected to the whole body system enables it to survive and grow. Now, I know it's not very nice, but consider for a moment your little finger chopped off. No wiggling, can't take part in grabbing and placing, and it's not going to survive, is it? Now, think of it the other way round. Think about your hand, your arm, your body without your little finger. Would you have the same grabbing ability? I mean, Chris would be in trouble on the keyboard and Douglas on the guitar. You won't be the same, will it? So it's the same point as with our children. In us as church, as a body, all of us matter. Every one of us, no matter how insignificant you feel and how much you deliberately sit on the back row because you feel that that's the place for you, you matter to us. Every single one of us matters. We're all part together, and our capability without you would not be the same. Well, Jesus told this story of this nobleman going off to a far-off place to be crowned king. And as he goes, he gives his servants some coins. You can think of them as coins or as resources or abilities, whatever you like. But he gives them and he says to them, put this to work. Do something with this. And later he returns as king, and one of the servants has turned one coin into 10. It's amazing. One of them has turned the one coin into 5. Pretty good. One had buried his, had done nothing with it, just buried it in the ground. And all he had to show was the original coin. Of course, now a little bit rusty and stuff, forgot to dip it in Coca-Cola first before he handed it back. Not much to show for it. Now, for the first two, there was reward and affirmation. They were considered trustworthy. They were given more responsibility. But for the third, well, even what he had, that was taken away from him. The king was not pleased. Now, we mentioned this story in a slightly different form a couple of weeks ago. Remember, it's not what each individual initially gets. They don't need to compare with each other. It's interesting that this version told by Luke is slightly different to how Matthew writes it down in his account. In Luke's version, there's 10 servants, and the to-be king gives them 10 coins. So it's kind of 10 shared between them. It's not necessarily one each. In Matthew's version, they get discrete amounts, and one gets a larger amount, one gets a medium amount, another gets a smaller amount. But in Luke's version, actually, you can see there's a collective responsibility. Together, they are to invest and put this to work. But, of course, as well as the collective responsibility, they have individual responsibility. Each has to decide, what are they going to do with their resources? And those who did stuff, who took a risk, showed themselves to be trustworthy and ultimately were given more. Well, here at the Countess Free Church, we take our Christ following, our discipleship, seriously. And we say that anyone of any Christian maturity should be able to take responsibility for their discipleship, should take an individual responsibility for their discipleship. Because together, our discipleship is, there's a word beginning with C for the mission. You remember what it is? It's mission critical. Our discipleship, the discipleship of each and every one of us here, is mission critical. Without it, the mission might be compromised. So we take our Christ following seriously, and with that, we encourage people to get stuck in. In other words, to put their coin to work, to put whatever God has put in their life to work, to engage, to get stuck in, to volunteer. Once someone new to the church wanted to settle here in the church said to me, so I'm joining this church, fantastic. And they said, so how long should I wait before I start volunteering? And I said to them, I can answer that question very easily straight away. The answer is zero. You don't have to wait any longer. Just get stuck in and find something to do, and or we'll point you at something and you can engage and volunteer. But here's the thing. Don't just do that as an individual. Do it connected with the body, connected with the other people in the church. You see, you might just feel like you're just the little finger. But you can benefit and benefit from being connected with others. And you can benefit and benefit from having a local interdependency with a few others. We call them prayer partnerships or prayer triplets. Local interdependency, where you just find one or two others, maybe three others at the most probably, that you click with, or you can kind of see eye to eye with, and agree with them, your own little mini covenant with those couple of people. Say, look, we'll meet up, whether it's every 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever works for you. And when we meet, we will pray for each other. And when we meet, I'll give you permission to ask me hard questions about how I'm growing in my discipleship. I will make myself accountable to you. It will be a little local interdependency, and we can benefit from each other. Prayer triplets, or prayer partnerships. But we also encourage people to be part of something bigger, something that has more capability than just a finger on its own, that can grab and place. Those are our small groups and our mission activity teams. Each of our groups, one of the things we insist, the groups take different forms and they're quite diverse, and that's absolutely brilliant. But we insist on one thing, that each group has a purpose, a reason to be an arm, a reason to have something to grab and place, so to speak, and not just be a collection of digits. Each group has a purpose. And we also have our mission activity teams, which are the teams of people who enable some of our activities to happen, like our parent and toddler group, like dads and kids when we have it on a Saturday morning, like Connect for Jesus with the children on a Wednesday evening. Those are enabled by mission activity teams, people who come together to enable that activity to happen. And in doing that, they serve together. And although we encourage them to pray together and to go on prayer retreats with each other, they might not do much study or whatever, but because they're serving together, inevitably their discipleship is intertwined at some level. And together they can do stuff that would be much greater than what they could do on their own. They can place and grab, so to speak, and make those things happen. And then, of course, on the larger scale, we say, you're not going to survive unless you're connected to the whole body and be part of the whole body and benefit from the nutrients and the oxygen of worship and lifeblood that flows through us. So in summary, get engaged and active, and there's three levels to do that. The local interdependency, the small prayer triplet or partnership, being part of something bigger that can achieve something, a group or mission activity team, and being connected to the whole body. That's how we work here at Countess Free Church. That's how it ticks. But back to the story, remember the trustworthiness was shown in putting the coin to work. That meant taking a risk. That meant going out and doing. But it's in the doing that there is growth. It's in the doing that there is growth, and the growth leads to more. And it's with that that God can then give more responsibility. And there's a spiritual principle right there. That as we go and do and exercise and show ourselves to be trustworthy, then God can give us more and greater things to tackle. And that works at all levels. If you think just the way we pray for people to get healed, we do it in small ways, and God works through that, and we grow through that, and are seen to be trustworthy in doing that, and so God leads us to greater things and doing it in bigger ways. There's the spiritual principle operating right there. So we have a great emphasis on learning by doing. And that means taking risks, because when we do, we might mess it up. We might get it totally wrong. We might make a right Og's Norton of it, to use a phrase that my dad would use. It might be a total mess, but at least we've done, and then we can learn and grow from that. So we put emphasis on learning by doing, and then we put emphasis on, I'm going to use a technical term here, reflective learning practice, which is where we come together, we look back on the mess that we've just made, because we tried to do something and we messed it up. We look back on that, reflect on that, learn from that, then add in new input, and then go and do for the next time round. And then come round again, reflect back, new input, go and do. Reflect back, new input, go and do. Could catch on. And that's how we encourage people to grow and go forward in their discipleship. The problem is, so many people seem to sit light with the go and do part of the equation. So they reflect back because they're kind of forced to. Then new input comes, they love that and accumulate information. Then the go and do challenge comes and nothing happens. And then they come back and then reflect back and decide, well, I haven't got much to reflect back because I didn't actually go and do last time. This is a problem. We learn by doing mostly. And in there is we'll become the growth and shown trustworthy and the greater responsibility. So let's not neglect the go and do part of the equation. A Christian organization did a survey of people who take part in Christian activity, community engagement, involved in food banks or debt relief or homeless shelters or whatever. And they talked to them about their engagement, they talked to them about their growth and their discipleship. 78% of the people who were actively involved in community engagement saw that through that their faith grew. Through that they grew as a Christian. Through that their discipleship grew and deepens and got bigger. 78%. So we go and do. But note the simple logic from the story. You do show growth, that shows you to be trustworthy, that enables to be trusted more. So as we are discipled and grow and shown to be trustworthy, we can then disciple other people. So a big question that we keep reminding ourselves of and are asking ourselves is, so as a mature Christian, who are you discipling? Because surely if you've grown to this level of maturity, you've got to a point where you can then help someone else and help them grow. You can be given that responsibility. So who are you discipling? It's a big thing for us here at Countess Free Church. Who are you discipling? Be discipled and start discipling others. And with that is a whole model of apprenticeship and mentoring people. And we apply that at all levels, whether it's a more experienced musician with a younger musician on what to do with their instrument, or helping someone to learn on how to do all the twiddly knob things on the PA desk, or in leadership growth, or in just basic discipleship. The model is the same. Walk with someone, show them how to do it, and then let them take over, because they can learn to do it themselves and stand on their own two feet, so that one day they can also mentor someone else. It's the model that Jesus used, so why knock it? Let's do the same. Let's make it as part of our fabric of how we operate as a church. Well, back to the story and to round off. One of the servants hid the coin, did nothing with it. Why did that servant do that? Because that servant had a misconception about the king. Thought that the king was mean. And in that climate of fear, hid the coin away. Now, that was bad. Even worse were, of course, some other people who didn't want this person to be king in the first place, sent a delegation after, say, don't come back, we don't want you as king. They get it in the neck. It's a hard ending to the story. It's just the way it is. But I'm going to make a rash assumption that because you're in this building this morning right now, you don't fall into that latter category, that actually you want him to be king. But now it's a question of how are you going to put to work what God has put into you. See, the reality is the king we serve is a generous king. He's not a mean king. He empowers, he enables, he entrusts, he lavishes good things on us. So for homework, go and do. Go home, read Luke chapter 19 as a whole, verse 1 through to the end. Read it as a whole and see what's going on there. Quick, a summary. Starts with the story of Zacchaeus. Most of us know the story of Zacchaeus, little mean tax collector, getting rich off the back of the normal people. Jesus goes to him and lavishes love and affirmation onto him. Says, we're going to eat at your home tonight. Zacchaeus positively responds to that, decides to change his ways to make good where he's cheated people and give half of his income, his wealth, away to the poor. He responds with lavish generosity with his money. That's kingdom life right there. We talk about kingdom life. There's an example of kingdom life right there. Lavishes his money. Very next thing, while the people were still talking about this, Jesus then tells the story we heard this morning about the investment of the coins, the money, and what they did with it, but I won't tell it again. Then Jesus goes into Jerusalem. How does he do that? Palm Sunday, we know this story. Goes in on a donkey, in other words, as a humble king. A king of a different kind. Not a mean lording it over king, a king of a different kind. And then, back end of chapter 19, what's the first thing that he does? Now he's in Jerusalem. Goes to the temple. What happens at the temple? He sees the money changers and the people selling the stuff for sacrifice. See how through chapter 19 it's money, money, money. There's an Abba song for that, isn't there? It goes on, it's money all the way through this chapter. And what does Jesus do? He takes action. He turns over the tables. Why? Because these people with their money and selling the sacrifices and all that stuff, they were putting a barrier, a hurdle, between the ordinary people and their ability to get close to God and to worship, making out God to be mean. And Jesus couldn't stand for that. And so did the whole tables turning thing. So what kind of person are you going to be? Someone who somehow thinks that God is mean. And because of that, whatever you've got, you're going to keep tight and under wraps. Almost in fear, or maybe actually in fear, thinking that God is mean. Are you going to be that person? Or are you going to be the person who gets stuck in and realizes the lavish generosity of God? Putting what God has put into your life into action, to work, to engage, to volunteer, to invest. And discover that as you do, God just keeps on giving and pouring in more with ever-increasing ripples of grace that go out across the city. Surely, as Countess Free Church here in 2019, we are called to be the latter. Why don't we stand together? And I'm going to invite the Spirit to come and freshly empower us to put in us what he would put in us. Another interpretation of the coin can quite easily be the Spirit of God. Remember, it's Luke 11 where Jesus says, ask for good things. If you ask for food, he's not going to give you a snake. If you ask for a nice egg, he's not going to give you a scorpion. And he says, the Father will give good things, the Holy Spirit. So let's ask the Spirit to empower us now.